Our main speaker tonight is John.
Hey guys, my name's John. I'm an alcoholic. Member of the Atlantic Group. My sobriety date is April 22nd, 1984. My sponsor is Terry F. He's in the room. He just had 28 years last month. And right at this moment, I'm practicing the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to try and convey the message that was taught to me 31 and a half years ago and continues to be taught to me by members like you guys, members of my home group. You know, it's funny. I'm going to say something. It doesn't sound right. You know, I grew up privileged, you know. And the privileges that I grew up with were growing up in the projects with absolutely nothing. And I could take you back to 1971. Now, check this out. I was 11 years old, right? 1971, we would wake up, no air conditioning in the summer, sweating. Leave the house as fast as possible. Go to the park and meet my crew. And at 11 years old, that's what we knew. We knew to go out into the street and earn and do everything that we wanted to do to get what we needed. And in 1971, being 11 years old and growing up basically with no direction, God had left. And our ideas as children were to run wild. I grew up in Woodside, Queens. And it seemed at that time everybody who had a child had a boy. And whatever we wanted was ours for the taking. And, you know, you hear different people, they talk about, I was a top shelf drinker, I was a bottom shelf drinker, I was this. We were whatever was closest to the front door drinkers, you know. We would run in the liquor store and we would grab everything, 20 kids, and we would run out. We'd go to the park and we would enjoy the moment. You know, when I think back about my childhood, we didn't really have goals. We didn't have people to teach us that, you know, going to school was going to be good and going to church and having hope and faith. And what we knew was to get loaded. And we did it very good. We would meet in the park and we would figure out what crimes we were going to commit that day. And sometimes it would be go to the railroad yard. And we used to break into the liquor warehouse and in the railroad yard and rob all the little bottles that they would sell on the Long Island Railroad. But we were kids with like an axe. We would axe the door down like we were firemen. And we would run out, and that was it. You know, it was about every day in the summer and the winter. It was about getting loaded. It was about evading our feelings and getting away from what was important to us. So, you know, school, God left first, and then school left, and, you know, it just was a downhill progression from that. I look around the room, and I see young people with ideas today, and Alcoholics Anonymous has taught you some of the ideas, and that's great. You know, I didn't think I was going to live to be 25. And I remember my mother says to me one day, she says, you know, I got you a job. I got you a job with Con Edison. And I said, Con Edison? I didn't even fill out an application. She says, well, I got you a job, and you're going to start Monday. And at the time, I didn't want anything good in my life. You know, I just wanted to continue to go because I thought I'd be dead by the time I was 25. And I remember I went to the job, and I filled out the rest of the paperwork, and they put me in a gang. It was called the Cable Gang. And if you ever see those Con Ed trucks that go around the city with the big reels of cable on the back, that's what I was in. I was in a gang with five guys. And three of them were degenerate gamblers, and me and another guy were both alcoholics. And I fit right in. It was like John belonged here. And, you know, as my progression of my alcoholism continued to drink more and more, and showing up for work and showing up as a son, a brother, a friend gets more and more distant, you send notices to people. They're like, look at you differently. And, you know, people who care about you, they want to help you. And the guy who was running the cable gang said to me one day, he says, you know, we have union counselors. And if you ever think that you have a problem, what we can do is they can send you to a place upstate. We call it the farm. And, a couple months later, he gave me a business card for this guy. And a couple months later, when I was sick and tired of being sick and tired and the pain was just so great and the loneliness and the despair and the struggling to make things happen and to put on an act and get to where I needed to be at any time was just too much. And I remember I called the guy up. It was a Friday. And I says, Eddie, his name was Eddie Mitchell. He was the counselor. I says, Eddie, my name's John. I'm in the cable gang, and I need help. He says, okay. He says, well, we don't send people to the farm on Fridays. So you have to come here on Monday, and don't tell your bosses or anybody in management that you called us. Just show up here on Monday morning with like a toothbrush and some change of clothes and come to this building and come to my office. And that's what I did. You know, I had like the last weekend. Monday morning, I went to his office, and I surrendered to what I now know is Alcoholics Anonymous and the disease of alcoholism. You know, when we talk about cancer, we talk about people who are cancer survivors. You know what I am? I'm an alcoholism survivor. You know, if you really think about the disease in its true text, first of all, the insurance companies wouldn't pay anything if they didn't have to. If it was a moral weakness that we had, they'd say, you know, you take your weak butt and you go get help somewhere else. We're not going to pay. But it's documented disease. And there's nothing to be ashamed about. You know, in all the years, 81 plus years, Alcoholics Anonymous is here. It's not about being ashamed of being alcoholic. It's about understanding what we have and going forward. So anyway, they sent me to this place called The Farm. It was upstate. And I learned what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. I learned about the principles, the concepts, and the ideas, and how you could change your life through the application of this. I came back from that place, and I got a home group in Queens. And it's funny because when I was a kid and we used to be in a neighborhood, we used to stay in a place called the Convent Yard. It was next to the church, and the nuns used to stay in there. But after us guys took it over, the nuns didn't go there no more. And we used to, like, stay in there and drink and, you know, get out of control. And on Saturday night, the Woodside group of Alcoholics Anonymous used to meet in the church right where the Convent Yard was. And this was my first introduction truly to Alcoholics Anonymous. And on Saturday nights, after all of us kids got good and loaded, we used to go to the AA meeting, and we used to yell through the window, "You alcoholics!" And we used to traumatize them, you know. And then it was 10 years later when I had 90 days, and they said to me, "John, we'd like you to share tonight. We want you to speak." And I remember getting up to the podium in the Woodside group, and I says, you know, first off, I just want to let you know I'm sorry for my past. And people were looking at me. I says, you know, 10 years ago when we were children, we used to come here and bother you. And I remember, like, the old-time members of that group would look and go, "Oh, boy, that was you, you little bum. You know, we used to chase after you, you know." But they never, you know, deny me membership. We don't deny membership here. What they did is they embraced me and says, you know what, kid, you needed it 12 years ago or 10 years ago, and today you haven't. So I kept, you know, making meetings. And you know, we talk about service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the truth of service is self-sacrifice. You know, everything that you get from Alcoholics Anonymous is not what you get, it's what you give. And as you apply these ideas in your AA program with your sponsor and with your friends, you come here, you show up. You know, meeting makers make it, but the truth of the matter is it's not meeting makers that make it. Showing up at an AA meeting doesn't mean you're going to make it. Showing up early and making the meeting happen and being a part of the structure of the group and helping clean up at the end and being a part of making the meeting happen is what meeting makers make it means. And I learned that early on. I learned, you know, we go early, we leave late, we hang out, we fellowship, we read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I was new, I had a tape. It used to run 24 hours a day in my head. And if you're new and that tape tells you you're a loser and you're never going to make it and you better give up and another day you can't make it or whatever, what happens is our literature, as we read it, we develop a second tape. We develop a tape on the other side of our head that teaches us that we are winners today and that every day sober is a successful day, and that that tape could be, in the beginning, when the tape is small, we rewind the tape and we play it over and over and over again, because we need to build esteemable feelings from our actions. And I've always been, you know, a member of, like in the old days, we used to give out coins, and in that coin it was a poker chip, and in the middle it was smooth, and on the outside it was rough. And if you really want to be a member of AA and you want to go forward with your AA program, it's better to be in the smooth part. And that's being a member of a group and being sponsored and being guided by people with direction. So anyway, here I am in Con Ed and I'm working away, you know. And I remember it was 6 days. I just turned 55 and it was 6 days before my 25th birthday. And that was the birthday that I thought I was going to die before. And I was down in a manhole, and we were in a hurry to finish our job, and they told me to cut the cable, that it was turned off. And I had a year and a half at the time, and I remember I cut the cable, and it was 27,000 volts. And I remember falling off the ladder and falling into the water, because down in those manholes is like water. And I remember them picking me up and taking me out of the manhole and lying me on the floor in Brooklyn. And they kept saying to me, "What's your name? What's your name? Please just tell us your name," to keep me from going into shock. And the only thing I could say to them at that point was that my name was John and that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said that because I really thought I was going to die that day. And my eyes were burned closed and my face was burned and my neck and chest was burned. And the person was holding my hand. He said his name was Bob and that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous also. He was the emergency service worker. And he said that he'll stay with me as long as it takes until people come to love me, to be around me. And he stayed with me a bunch of hours. And then my family got there. My sponsor got there. And I spent 16 days in intensive care burn unit, New York Cornell Hospital. And they removed the skin from my face and my neck. And every day they would take me in a room and they would scrub the raw burns. And the burns were like pimples, but they weren't pimples, they were nerves. And I would just stand there like a baby and cry. But every day people would come from the home group, or they would come from somebody that my sponsor knew, and they would come and they would sit by me and bring me ice cream and hold my hand. And to tell you the truth, I never felt the burn of the fire once. I only felt the warmth and the glow of the fellowship, because this is what happens, you know, just because we're in AA, don't make us extinct from pain. You know, there's a saying, winners play hurt. And the truth of the matter is most times when you see like a Super Bowl championship team, most of the time it's the team that had the most injuries or the most hardest times. But they got out there every Sunday and they played their heart out. They played their heart out because it's something that they love. And that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's what we do. We come here, and no matter what, we play it out. So evolving in my AA program and being understanding of the spiritual principles that we have, I remember it was around Christmas, and I was staying by my pop's house, and my parents' house was my ninth step amends, and it was Christmas Eve. And I remember I says to my dad, I says, "You know, Dad, listen, tomorrow I want to go to the cemetery on Christmas Day, and I want to pay respects to your parents. They had died before I was born." He says, "And I want to put some flowers there." And what I was doing was setting a stage to have a nice moment with my pops and make amends to him. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I was at their house sleeping and the phone rang. And I says, "Oh." And I get up, I answer the phone. And the guy says, "Listen, I'm looking for George." I says, "Well, this is my father's name is George. He's sleeping. Who's this?" He says, "Well, my name is George also." So I says, "Well, what could I do for you?" He says, "Well, I think he's my dad." And I remember I had about 2 years at the time. And I says, "Well, it can't be my father. My father's only, he's got two boys, and one's Jimmy and one's John. There's no George." So he says to me that his father was a prisoner of war. He was a frogman in the Korean War. And at the time, they were blowing up ships that were coming out of China, supplying North Korea with arms. And the bombs went off, and they swam into China, and they got captured, and they were prisoner of war in China. And I said, oh, boy, because my father was a prisoner of war in China. He was captured. And when he came home, he was in a hospital for a year.
Thank you.
And after that year, he met my mother, and they supposedly eloped and started a family. And I says, well, you know, it's a little bit of a coincidence, George, but I'll tell you the truth. I'm not going to go wake my father up. He's lying next to my mom. I don't think it's a good idea. I break this on them Christmas Eve, you know. But it had been 35 years. Since this kid knew where his dad was. And what I'm trying to get at is, you know, my dad used to walk down the block, and I used to be in the street playing with my friends, and I could tell the way he walked if it was going to be a good day or a bad day. And I judged him every time he walked down the block, and I knew it was going to be a bad day. And I says, oh, my God, here comes my father. He's an embarrassment. But I never knew what his hurts were. I never knew what his life was like and how he... Maybe it was George's birthday that day that he was coming home bombed and didn't know where his kid was. And I remember that day we were in the car and we're going to the cemetery. I says, well, Dad, first off, I got to tell you, I'm very sorry for being the child that I was as a kid growing up. An embarrassment and shame to the family and unpredictable and bad in school and defiant and everything that I was. I says, and by the way, we got a phone call last night. And it was his son, and that's why I'm John, not George. And for the first time in 35 years, my father had the opportunity to talk to his son, you know. And my mother knew all about the family. At that time, it was like a divorce, and it was shameful, I guess, to be remarried to a divorcee or whatever. And they just eloped and started a family. And that day was the first day that our family, we didn't really have no secrets. And in AA, when you have a sponsor and you have somebody to talk to, you know, that you go to with trust. You know, it's nice to do the work, find someone. He's the best there is with the work. Get the work done, you know. But the truth of the matter is sponsorship is about going to somebody and knowing that if you have to cry your heart out and you need to speak to somebody no matter what, that you're safe and you're secure and you could trust him, and the guidance that he gives you is the guidance that he will give his own kid. And that's what I get through sponsorship, and that's what I got from the men that I've been sponsored by for many years in AA. You know, Mickey Diamond sponsored me for years. And, you know, even though I'm in my 31st, 32nd year, I call my sponsor all the time. You know, it's not only a guidance, it's friendship, you know. I'm really, really grateful that I have an opportunity to have somebody to call. You know, that'll take my call and spend the time with me. You know, I came to this group right after my 25th anniversary. I remember my wife came to me. We had a big party for my 25th, and my wife came to me. It was Saturday night, and my wife came to me that Monday, and we were sitting in front of the house. I just finished building this gigantic house. And she says, are you happy? And I'll tell you the truth, I was as happy as I thought I'd ever be. You know, I never thought of me being happy. I know we had children that were in play. But was I happy? I never even thought about it. You know, you have a business, you become successful. I left Con Edison. Made a lot of money. I had some kids, went on vacations. You buy clothes, you buy expensive cars. You know, now I'm real privileged. But was I happy? And I says, I don't really know. And we talked more, and she wasn't happy, and I really wasn't that happy. And before you knew it, the marriage was over. And I remember this house. I mean, I had four swimming pools at this house, right? Now, believe me, I know the difference between holding a newcomer's hand and going swimming in four swimming pools. It's like overkill. You don't need it, right? And it's by the beach. And I remember the day the moving trucks came and they took half the furniture. And the kids got in the car and they were young at the time. Some of you know my son Michael. It was only 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago. He was 9.5. And we had another house and we decorated the house. You know, you put funny things in the bedrooms and bunk beds, even though there's only one kid in the room and, you know, like all this stuff. And I remember the day they were standing, I was standing in the doorway and the truck drove down the driveway and away from the house. And I was standing there uncontrollably crying. And I had a woman that worked in the house. She still works for me. She says, "Mr. John, Mr. John. Come on, Mr. John." She says, "Let's make the house as nice as we can with the furniture that we have." And we moved everything around and we made some rooms and I was still crying because the hurt in your soul, the hurt that you think that you could never overcome, the pain that's so deep inside you that no way you could stay sober. Well, you can. You see, we don't die from hurt. We die from not dealing with hurt. So what happened is I went to a group in my area, was in Huntington Bay, and I started making coffee again because I know how to regroup. And I started making coffee, and I got close to some people, and I made some coffee, and I stayed there. And then I started coming in because my dad was sick, and he was a veteran, and he was in the VA hospital on 23rd Street. So I used to go for like 100 days straight. I went every day to the hospital to sit with my pops. And every Sunday night, I went to the Atlantic group downstairs. And I sat there, and I sat there and I shook people's hands and I put my hand up if I was asked to participate. And I got the message that you guys were talking about, if the only thing I got to was to listen. And my father passed away. And before he passed away, he said, "You know, John, I'm very proud of you. And I think that Alcoholics Anonymous has changed your whole life. And you're such an accomplishment to our family. And whatever disgrace you might have shown in the past, we're all proud of you." And my father moved on. He went on to another place. And around that time, a friend of mine, Sal, started calling me. And he's like, "John, my wife's leaving me." And Sal had 16 days more than me about. We came in and got sober together. And I told Sal, "Don't worry, I'm going to come pick you up every day. We'll go to a meeting." So every day I would pick him up and go to a meeting. And every day Sal would tell me, "I'm going to kill myself, John. I can't take the pain." And I used to say, "Sal, how could you even think that? You can't kill yourself. We don't kill ourselves. We just go to meetings and we don't kill ourselves, you know?" And I remember a couple months in, I got a phone call from a guy named Frankie. We weren't that close, but he was a mutual friend of mine and Sal's on a Monday morning. And Frankie said, "Did you hear yet?" And I said, "No, what?" He said, "Sal killed himself." And Sal killed himself with 26 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He put a note on the door, "Please don't come in," for his secretary. He wrote, called the police, and he went in his office and shot himself in the head. And I remember that day when I waited for my kids to get off the bus, because when I got separated, I took off from my business. I just kind of stayed at home with my kids every day. And I remember, like, the women in AA used to say, "John, this is what you do. When the kids get off the bus, make sure you make brownies before they get off the bus, because it smells of home. It doesn't only show you love them. It means that you love them." And I would cook stuff every day for them. And when they came home, I fed them. And they stayed with me for a year. And I remember I hugged them that day. It was like I made it through. I made it through the light, you know. I realized that my understanding and application of the principles that you guys were teaching me helped me make it through the pain that was unbearable. And, you know, when we talk about a general message, we share in a general way. This is not a general disease. You know? Listen, I know a guy, he says to me one day, "A good drink would kill 3/4 of the Atlantic group." I says, "Oh, yeah?" He says, to tell you the truth, I think that a good drink will kill 100% of the Atlantic room. Because if you're an alcoholic and you go out and you have a good drink, there's no, all bets are off. I says, the only thing a good drink wouldn't kill is a non-alcoholic. I go, so if it wouldn't kill you, what are you doing here? You know? This disease isn't to be messed with. You know, I have a 16-year-old son who's got 80 days. He suffers from terminal uniqueness and fatal cool. They used to say that in the old days. He's my son, guarantee 100%. I love him to death. I used to share in meetings. I didn't want to cry like, oh, my kid. I used to say, oh, you know, I'm sponsoring this guy, you know, like for 8 years. He doesn't listen to me. That's when he was 8 years old, you know. He's never listened to me. I don't know why I think he should start. Listen, I am truly blessed. You know, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous has afforded me opportunities to be able to take the good and leave the bad. You know, my family, my children, my work, my home group, everything that has given me great opportunities. And it's not because I'm smarter than anyone or whatever. You know, they say the smartest people in the world don't get AA. You know, this is our message is a message from one amateur to another. That was the reading on my birthday, August 25th. And I just don't get tired of AA, you know? People get tired. Oh, well, you got 30-something years, you still go to AA? Of course I still go to AA. If I came to AA and nobody was here, what would I do today? Where would I be? You know, when we go to institution meetings, it's funny because I don't only go to institution meetings to help the people who are suffering in the institution. I go to help connect the families back together. You know, when you go to an institution meeting and you share your story and you get a guy to go home instead of go to the bar, to the corner, and he goes home that one time and his children are waiting for him because they know when he's getting out or when he's getting out of jail. They know when you're getting out. And hopefully they make it home. You know, there used to be a public service announcement, and it used to be a long hallway, and it was dark, and at the end of the hallway was a door, and it was only opened a little bit. And what it was supposed to simulate was a person who's a newcomer walking down a hallway going to their first meeting. And it's scary. You know, it's scary to get down there. And you would hear the people in the background talking in the hallway. And the camera would get closer and closer to the door. And that's all we ask of you, is to come the first time. Give yourself an opportunity and put your hand up. You know, a lot of times in Alcoholics Anonymous, we talk about wreckage of the past. You know, my fourth step, I have to write my fourth and fifth. I got to tell my sponsor everything. Well, believe me, there's nothing to be embarrassed about when you talk about your wreckage of the past. But when you got 20 years and 30 years and you talk about something called wreckage of the present, that's when you got something to be embarrassed about, when you go to your sponsor and say, you know, after all these years and all this understanding and all these principles and all these speaking commitments and I act a certain way, you know. But the only way you can change is to reveal yourself. You know, when I was talking about Sal, there's always a story that I tell when I share. It's about dinosaurs. I was asked when I had around 25 years to speak at a dinosaur meeting. And what it is there's three dinosaurs on a deserted island. And they got nothing to do, and one day a bottle washed up, and one of the dinosaurs popped the top on the bottle, and a genie popped out. And the genie says, you all have one wish. And the first dinosaur says, wow, we've been stuck on this island for a long time. And he says, I wish I was gone, and poof, he was gone. And the second one says, wow, that's great, I'm going home. I want to go home. Please send me home, and poof, he's gone. And the third one says, boy, it's going to be lonely here. I wish they were back. And in all the years I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous and all the people who touched my life, they came in and asked me to sponsor them and sit by me and be around and come to the group and make coffee. And one day they made that fatal decision not to be here no more. They gave up on AA. They gave up on themselves. They gave up on their people. We have no idea where they ever end up or where they go to. Truth of the matter is, it breaks your heart, but you help anyway. You get close to people anyway. I want to thank my home group for helping me for the last 6.5 years continue to recover from alcoholism. And I'd like to thank Cynthia for allowing me this privilege. Thank you.